buy the idea that, you know, the society the way it is right now, it has to be this way.
Welcome to Rewrite the Rules with your host, Alex Starr.
So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality.
It's time to live life on your own terms.
What do you really want?
Hey, hello. What is up, people? What is up? Been a couple weeks, but I am back in Austin and happy to be projecting my voice in an empty room into this black muffled net thing in front of my mouth that you guys are now listening to in your headphones that you downloaded from the air. So this is so cool. All right, today we are talking about boozy booze with my homie Will. He is 18 months sober and terrific guy. We just talk about that whole process of getting sober. I know I've had a lot of comments lately. I've talked to a lot of friends about trying to cut back on alcohol or what is too much and what is not enough. Actually, nobody has that problem. But as of today, let's see, it is November 7th. I am about 9 weeks sober, 10 weeks, and I am going the year as a challenge to myself. And just because I knew that it was holding me back, so I'm trying to see where I can get in a year if I don't have booze in my life. So hope you guys get a lot out of this. Feel free to contact me. I'm always open to talk about this, and Will is too. He's an amazing guy. You can reach me at alex@alexstarr.com. And I'll put all the links to this episode and how you can get in touch with Will and find him on social media and stuff if you want. So you can reach out to him as well. So love you all and enjoy. Spread the word. Have a good week. Have a good month. Have a good Thanksgiving. Love you all. Enjoy. Alrighty, William.
Hello, sir.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Maradian.
Maradian. I actually didn't know that at all.
Most people don't.
It's a complicated name.
It's a complicated story.
Not as easy as Star.
No, Star. It is
that
not.
That one gets it. That's a little easier. William Meridian.
If you just think of Prime Meridian and just say Meridian,
I usually
just let it slide.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, dude. We are literally in the perfect spot to record a podcast.
It absolutely is. It's cool. It's brisk. It's nice.
I don't know if I should eat these honey bunches of oats while we do the podcast.
You should, because I'm envious. I'm allergic to wheat, so I can't eat any of them. They look delicious, don't they?
It's good, man. Gluten is so nutritious. It's delicious.
I hate you so much.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I was excited to have you on because I really wanted to talk to someone about sobriety, about alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who talks a lot? Who enjoys talking?
Who enjoys talking because, about themselves?
Well, that's the cool thing about these podcasts is a lot of times it's easy to get people to come on because who doesn't want to talk about themselves? You're like, hey, do you want to come on and tell me your story? People are like, yeah, oh yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's fun. It's, I'm a pretty open book and I've had a lot of weird experiences that I think a lot of people can learn from. So that's why I stopped getting afraid to tell my stories and what I've been through and stuff.
Good. Yeah, so the main issue of sobriety. So for everyone listening, I am, 10 days sober now?
Yes. About something, somewhere in there.
10 days. And so I recently decided to cut it out entirely because it basically was taken away from my life more than it was giving to it, right?
Right.
And it's like a process. And we're pretty much the same age. You're 29, right? Mm-hmm. I'm 28. And you gave it up how long ago?
I gave it up in April of 2016. So I'm going at about approaching a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's backtrack a little bit. Take us back to the dark beginning. Let's go to the blackout phase.
Okay.
Step one, the blackout phase. Yeah. It's like, have you seen, what's that Leo movie? Wolf of Wall Street? Where they take the Quaaludes and it's like the amnesia phase and like the full on, what is it? Not narcolepsy. Is it the narcolepsy phase where he's on the floor just like.
Oh, epilepsy.
Epilepsy. There you go. Yeah.
So like, I guess when I started party drinking, so to speak.
Yeah. Just kind of like, what was the final, I'm really curious about the final stages of what led you to be like, you know what, I'm 100% done?
Well, you know, there are the final stages, like, but a lot of people ask the question about, like, what happened, you know, what caused you to make this decision? And the story's there, and it was a shitty night for everyone involved. It was a shitty week. It was a shitty month. But I started using, like, whatever to cope when I was in high school. And so...
Using what?
Well, in high school...
Give us the deets. Don't hold back.
Okay, so my first drug that I ever tried was meth.
Okay.
Meth was my gateway drug.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you. Like, before I even tried, like,
oh, this
champagne.
Podcast is going to be better. This is better than I thought.
Yeah.
Grape juice, meth. Grape
yeah,
juice,
pretty
meth.
Much.
Apple was, juice, meth.
It was, I started doing meth because I had 4 AP classes and I was on 3 varsity teams and I didn't have enough hours in the day to stay up and do my homework after I was tired from, like, football practice or weightlifting. Mm. So I'd be like, well, I'll just do some of that blue shit or whatever. It's not blue. It's white. But acquaintances of mine, you know how, like, there's always a couple coffee hangouts in high school? Like, the cool kids go to this one, the burnouts go to this one. Well, we went to, like, the burnout coffee shop before school every day because my mom was in grad school and she dropped us off, like, an hour and a half before school every
day. That
must
be a Pete's, not a Starbucks, for sure.
It's definitely a Starbucks. We were slumming it at Rancho Palos Verde Starbucks. But that was where this one kid in my high school hung out that I knew dealt drugs. And I was like, hey, man, I'm, like, falling asleep at midnight when I still have 2 or 3 hours of reading to do. Do you have anything that can help me out? Like, fast forward a year and a half, I had lost over 70 pounds. I was, like, in and out of hospitals. And I had been awake for, like, 56 hours. And I was having hallucinations that people were trying to break down my bedroom door at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was yelling at them to stop and just open the door. And my mom opened the door and she's like, who the fuck are you yelling at? What the fuck? Oh, you're crazy. Okay, great. And they shipped me off to a psychiatric hospital. And that sort of started like a long life of cycling in and out of treatment centers and psychiatric hospitals. Because, like, of course, you know, it started out as, like, I need to get straight A's, and it turned into partying and coping and bad coping mechanisms and self-harm. And all 3 kids of us growing up were in and out of treatment facilities because we all had emotional disturbance issues.
Why was that? Was it family?
Yeah, I mean, broken home. My parents divorced really early. My father has got lots of mental health problems that he took out on us in very different ways. You know, pair that with, like, you know, some people are just sort of genetically predisposed to that sort of thing. My mom took all of these fertility drugs because she couldn't get pregnant and she kept having miscarriages. And I've done a lot of reading on those drugs, and there is a high correlation between children who were conceived on those drugs and mental health problems and genetic disorders. So I'm sure it's related, but there's a bazillion different factors.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I discovered alcohol much later. I was doing, like, meth and weed and coke and all that fun stuff.
Before I
started having beers. And I think it's because it, like, tasted so bad. And I just, like, it took so much of beer to get me wasted. And it took, like, 3 seconds of a burning sensation in my nose to get me high. So
you just hadn't discovered whiskey yet.
Right.
That seems to be the main problem.
the main issue is Jameson didn't find me in time to save me from meth.
Yes, exactly.
So
he's probably a slightly better friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then I went into college and, you know, going to parties, meeting people. I didn't party a lot in college with, like, my classmates, but in the gay scene, I was getting snuck into bars by guys I was hooking up with. And
I was gonna say,
like,
dudes
want
to fuck, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, dudes want to fuck.
Same
they
thing as with guys
drunk.
And girls.
Yeah, totally. It's all the same. Yeah. Like, look at this underage kid who doesn't know what's up. Let's get him drunk and take him home. When I was like, no, I'm just getting free beer out of this. I fully intend on going home with you, whether or not. Like, you know,
you little slut.
I play the system 100%. Ethical slut, I call it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a book.
It's a book.
It is a book.
I've read
yeah.
it twice. It's
oh,
great.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But that's when the drinking started. And that's the drinking started getting paired with ecstasy because I was going to clubs and I was a stripper and I was dancing at these clubs. And, you know, they're feeding you booze and you're taking like cocaine and ecstasy to stay awake and stay with the music while you're also being fed free booze. It's like a perfect disaster for someone with an addict personality
for
like
sure.
myself.
Yeah. That's a disaster for almost anybody.
Most people.
Yeah, but
yeah.
man, you add in the rest of the stuff. And,
yeah.
yeah.
And like at the time 21 hit, I then had a drinking problem by the time I was old enough to drink.
Okay.
Like I said, in and out of psychiatric hospitals, like, and that went until I was 22. Like, I was blackout drunk, and got in a fist fight with someone and it got real bad. And I was kicked out of the bar and I like checked myself into a hospital and went through detox and all this stuff. And I stopped doing hard drugs at that point, but I kept drinking and kept drinking and kept drinking and kept drinking. And eventually when my career got on track, when I graduated, I went to my first career job, which was at Planned Parenthood as like personal assistant to one of the seniors, the senior presidents. And I stopped going out as much, but I was still drinking a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have the energy to go out and drink till 2 a.m. because I had such a huge commute in the morning, but I would drink at home instead.
Sure,
and
yeah.
So like I'd drink 3 bottles of wine and then wake up 5 hours later and drive to work.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband I met when I was 23, and he was also a party animal, and he also is a heavy drinker, and it just sort of like we enabled each other, but we were having such a good time while
right.
we were drunk. We didn't really think about it too much.
Right.
It did exacerbate some of our, like, you know how, like, when in your first year of dating, it's, like, super hard. You don't really trust the person. You're trying to figure them out.
I don't have much dating experience. Past, like, 2 months.
Okay, so here's a lesson. the first year of dating, at least in my experience, is super hard because
okay.
you're learning to trust someone with your feelings.
I always
feelings.
Thought that's supposed to be the best. I thought that's the honeymoon
phase.
No,
man, if you're dating for your first year, like the sex is fucking incredible, but
uh-huh.
also like you're jealous, you don't really know them quite well, you have
oh,
to learn.
Okay.
You have lots of miscommunications as you learn each other.
Okay.
First year's kind of hard, and drinking definitely exacerbated that. But we got past the first year relatively unscathed, but the drinking kept going, and like I kept thinking that all these things were happening to me, like, oh my god, my car, this, oh my god, like I have another medical problem, I can't believe I have to go back to the doctor, or oh my god, I'm broke again, like the whole time not even thinking for a second like I have a drinking problem.
This is interesting. I'm gonna interrupt you for a sec.
Yeah.
Because when I took July off, and I've taken like weeks off at a time, and I took July off and just like the 10 days now, the problems don't go away,
mm-hmm.
right?
But
they become so much smaller. And
totally.
I don't know a better way to describe it except for that just everything becomes easier. That like, okay, yes, like the car breaks down or I don't have money or I want to get up early and work out or like it's just everything about like my mood and kind of how I like my conviction in myself to like solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it maybe comes from just like you just feel better, you have more confidence, you just have more self-esteem because you're not constantly poisoning yourself, I guess. I just feel when problems arise now or when I'm not drinking as much, it just feels like, oh, okay, that's a problem. I can solve it. Whereas
right.
before it was like just kind of always in this, I don't feel 100%. I'm maybe in a little slight haze because I had a few beers the night before.
Yeah, I've seen you. I've seen you hazy before. When you just kind of glare at me because I'm too loud. Well, so there are like two schools of thought on that, right? So not two schools of thought, but kind of two phenomenons here.
Okay.
The first one is if you don't have like a hardcore addiction issue or like a pattern of behavior that's extremely destructive, like your case, I think that you... and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from my observations, like, you were spending lots of money and you were binge drinking here and there, but it wasn't a huge problem. It was not getting in the way of you being successful at work. You started a new job and you were immediately good at it. You got the job. You networked to get the job. Like, it wasn't getting in the way of you leading a pretty normal life for someone who's 28.
Correct.
And new in town, right?
Correct.
I think it makes sense that things were easier for you when you stopped drinking because you were already a kind of a driven person with conviction. That's just like your personality, and you're a fighter and you're tenacious and you don't like to be bored. So you have a lot of those things in your advantage because Alcohol is a depressant, but also it kills your metabolism. And when you drink, you don't sleep. You think you're sleeping, but you're not. Physiologically, it's a completely different experience, which is awful. It's like not really sleep. It's a lie. It's all a lie.
Yeah,
you're not passed out drunk. You're just immobile.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So I think for a lot of people who cut out drinking, who haven't yet reached that point, they see immediate results. And it can become, their heads are clearer, they have more energy in general, which makes everything easier to process mentally and emotionally.
Yeah, the cognitive function is unbelievable.
It's fucking great. Yeah. I wish you could get high on knowing how smart you are. Like, that would be my new addiction. Because just ever since I quit drinking, like, things just make more sense. Additionally, alcohol is a depressant, so... Like, you literally can, like, we've talked about, like, the Will Moradian doom spiral where, like, if I get on a tear, I can find something negative and just go down a rabbit hole. Mm. Like, that kind of stuff happens way more easily when you're drinking. So, yeah, you have more confidence. You feel better about life. And things don't seem so drastic. Like,
exactly.
An obstacle. Great, my car broke down. Yeah. Instead of crying and drinking about it, I'm going to take it in.
Well, you know? Exactly. I think because what happens is it really becomes a conscious and, more importantly and more dangerous, is that it becomes a subconscious coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Where it's like you are subconsciously relying on it and depending on it.
Exactly.
To, like, you know what? And it's also something that, like, subconsciously you're looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so... The craziest thing that's happened is that I've had to separate what do I actually enjoy versus
right.
what did I enjoy because I was ingesting alcohol.
Right.
And I remember going to I love blues music and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like in July when I was like 2 weeks in, and I went and I saw the show and I didn't have anything to drink. And I remember thinking like, I enjoyed this, but like, why didn't I enjoy this as much as I used to?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it was like, was that just because this drug was here with me, you know, like my friend alcohol was accompanying me on.
Yeah.
And it starts to accompany you on basically everything,
right.
Especially if you're 20 something living in a city.
It's easy.
It's always there.
Yeah.
And the lines get blurred between what do I actually enjoy and what do I enjoy because there's a drug present.
Right. And what have you been conditioned to enjoy based on the endorphin release of alcohol?
Exactly.
Like when you're drinking it.
Exactly.
So like
that's
your brain,
what I'm saying. Yeah,
your
yeah.
brain's neuroplasticity is amazing. You can be trained to only like something when you're drunk. So I bet there's a part of your brain that was like, associated the neurotransmitter response to alcohol with enjoying blues music. So you literally trained your brain to enjoy blues music more
right.
when you're drinking.
Right.
So that leads into like this other problem where that turns into, you were saying how like booze is something to look forward to, right? When you're a problem drinker and you stop drinking, it's not all fucking butterflies at first. Everything's actually like way harder. So for me, when I first stopped, I was checked into a hospital, and I had to go through detox and all that stuff. They put me on like blood pressure and seizure meds.
This is a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it because you were going to go through withdrawal that was going to,
yeah,
because you were drinking
yeah.
so much that
I
your
mean,
body was going to.
Right. Well, I mean, they take precautions. I was definitely not in a place where I was drunk all day, every day. Like I was drinking every day, but I could wait till I got home to do it,
right.
so to speak. But yeah, when I did my, so what happened was basically, I don't remember all of it, but we got in this binge drinking blackout night, and apparently like my PTSD lizard brain kicked in and I thought my husband was someone else, and we got in like this physical fight, and the apartment was trashed and he kicked me out, and I don't remember like how this happened, but I walked to my best friend's house miles away with no cell phone, no GPS, just sort of stumbling at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, classic 4 a.m. drunk.
And I broke down his door and I asked him to help me kill myself because I couldn't figure out how I was going to do it at 4 o'clock in the morning with like no buses around, because I had always envisioned jumping in front of a bus. And he was, you know, he's one of those people that grew up in Texas, a pretty small sheltered life, and he likes it that way, but he's never encountered anything like this. And he and his wife have never had to deal with anything like this. And here comes, you know, magical old Will screaming down the door with my fabulous self with like, oh my God, help me kill myself, like reeking of booze, like
wow.
my clothes are falling off or whatever. And I woke up that afternoon, and he had like tried to work with my husband, and it got checked into a hospital. And in the intake interview is when I realized I had a drinking problem. When they were like, so how often do you drink? And we started talking about it. And they were like, so like, when's the last time you like went more than 24 hours without a drink? And I sat down and I thought and I thought and I thought it through. And I was like, you know, I honestly don't fucking remember. This is really horrifying and humiliating. And then they said, well, what if we told you you could never drink again? And I like, my mouth went dry. I was like, what? Like I had a physiological instinct nerve response to the thought of going sober that said fuck that. And that's when they were like, okay, well, just to be safe, we're putting you on what's called a sequel watch while you're in here. And then so I was in treatment for suicidal ideation and alcohol abuse and PTSD for about a week in intensive treatment. Like I was in a facility, I wasn't allowed to leave. There were
PTSD
visitors.
From what?
I was raped twice. Oh. Once when I was 15 and again when I was 19.
This story, we are just, there's so many rabbit holes that we
can
jump down.
Oh yeah, people at App on Engine hate me and they don't all hate me, but people wonder why I'm so intense and I'm like, you guys have no idea.
but I mean, I gotta say you're pretty lighthearted though for...
Well, it's taken a lot of practice. So yeah, I went through treatment and then I did 2 months of outpatient rehab. And during that time I was applying to work here and I interviewed with only 3 or 4 weeks sober.
Wow.
Yeah. So the first like 3 months at our company, I was just like white knuckling it. I had no idea how to operate without alcohol. No one in the company knew how sober I was, like how freshly sober I was.
Yeah.
And I'm getting invited to drinking and happy hours stuff I would normally do.
Yeah, this type of, I mean, it's a tech company for people listening. And it centers around most of the activity, all of the activities.
Have booze. Yeah, and we have...
I don't say they center around booze, but
it's an easy way to get people talking.
Yeah, and Friday afternoon at 4, there's people cracking beers open in the office. I mean, it's very open towards
booze. It's Austin tech startup.
Which is cool.
It's cool, and it's great, and it works for a lot of people, but for me...
it's cool unless you're
trying to go sober. Yeah. And I knew that going in, and it was like, it was hard. I had to deal with a lot of shitty stuff after that. Like, dealing with the fallout of like getting in an actual fight with my husband while being sober for the first time, like basically in 15 years, trying to interview and be like the pressure of like, I have no income right now while you're trying to go sober, the pressure of like apologizing to everyone you realize you fucked over because you were drinking so much. Like there are holes in our walls from that fight and I had to look at them every day while I was sober. And all I could think was like, oh my God, like I just want a fucking Jameson and Coke right now.
Mm.
But once I lost 10 pounds just because I cut out booze and I had a glowing quarterly review at work, I started to realize like I really made the right choice. Mm. And my husband went sober with me out of solidarity. And he also saw the effects of how good it was for us. I had like actually realized while I was in treatment that we both had drinking problems that just manifested very differently. He wouldn't drink every day, but he would drink to like like 20 drinks at a time when he did drink. And I would just like, I would drink every day and then binge on the weekends. And so it was a condition of us not getting a divorce over this whole thing that he had to go sober with me or else I would have to like get a divorce and move out because I was not going to be able to do it alone. And so once we both started doing it, we both saw the physical and emotional benefits and our life started getting back on track and we were able to cope with stress in like normal adult ways and let ourselves freak out about things without drinking.
Mm.
That's when the onset of clarity happened and making good choices and being able to cope with horrible situations like a normal adult rather than just drinking until they go away.
Well, and the funny thing is about alcohol is it tricks you into thinking that it's a stress reliever. So you take it to relieve the stress, but then it just compounds it.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
How did you not know that it was a problem? Because I think that's interesting for a lot of people as well. Like how are you drinking that much? And did it ever cross your mind that this could be an issue?
Honestly, no. We were having relationship issues in hindsight. They were all because we were drinking.
But I mean, there weren't like the mornings that you wake up and you were like, God, I just gotta, this booze is just not working out for me. Did you have those moments, or was it really just you were...
There were a couple fights, like arguments that we had where we were drunk and we were just like, what the fuck were we even fighting about?
That I mean, like you personally, sense. I guess.
No, for me, the reason I was able to ignore it was I was fixated on my husband's binge drinking behavior. I was like, Randall has the problem. Oh. Randall's the one who has the drinking problem. Randall binge drinks, and that's when we get in these fights, is when he binge drinks. And then in my intake interview is when the light bulb went off.
That's
oh shit, that's both of us. Oh shit, I'm a selfish millennial fuck. That's right.
Wow, that's interesting, because it is a well, a lot of it's interesting. The fact that you started off with like meth and coke before you went to beer. There's so many interesting parts of this.
Oh yeah.
But it's crazy how I think what happens is that alcohol is so confusing. It's very, very confusing. And the more,
yes.
I'm sure you've dealt with this, the more that I've like, you know, I've talked to a lot of friends about just like, I don't know if it's the age that we're at, the late 20s, but I hear this all the time of something along the lines of, yeah, man, I got to cut back. Something like that from girls, guys, just a all lot of people, like if you're 25 and over.
Yeah.
No, because under 25, I was like, yeah, maybe I'm drinking a little too much, but fuck it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But 25 and over, I hear that, you know, boiled down to like, I need to cut back from a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that alcohol is very confusing because everyone knows that it is
it's bad for
is
you.
Bad.
And, no
and, secret. And I'm talking for people that have an issue. Like, my dad can literally have one beer a month. And doesn't think about it the rest of the month. Like, he's just wired that way. Doesn't, no problem with it whatsoever, right?
Right.
But I think if you're a social person and you're in your late 20s in any city listening, a lot of stuff revolves around booze. And you find yourself all of a sudden drinking more and more of it. And like you said, it drags you down, unless you're like full-on alcoholic. It drags you down just enough where you're like, this is not affecting my life positively, but it's not enough
right
to make you quit.
Yeah, there's a whole do you know anyone in AA or anything like that?
Yeah, I have a few friends that I actually reached out to. I talked to you about it, and there's a few friends of mine that have been sober for a few years, and I was talking to them about it as well.
Right. So have they ever told you about the concept of hitting rock bottom?
I know the harder you hit, the higher you bounce.
Also true. But the concept of rock bottom is if you're a problem drinker, and I don't always agree with this because I feel I could have gone worse if I didn't decide to go in the hospital. I feel it could have gotten worse.
Sure, you could have died eventually.
Right, or like, you know, finally gotten the nerve to try to kill myself.
I was going
to
say, could have found your magic school bus.
Right, exactly. Fuck, man.
I know. That was, as it was coming out, I was like,
Mrs. Frizzle will not approve.
As that was coming out, I'm like, I'm going to do it.
Do it. Just fucking do it. The thing is, so the concept of rock bottom is you, like, your life cannot get worse. That's when you realize you have to stop drinking. And the reason a lot of people don't identify that is just, you know, there's this idea that like, okay, well, my life hasn't halted. My life isn't terrible. So therefore, like, I don't have the issue. I didn't have to hit rock bottom to get slapped in the face by reality. Like, if I didn't decide to go to the hospital and we just like went our ways and did the whole like, oh, I'm sorry, we fought, blah, 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 let's not do that again. And then had another drink. Like, I'm pretty sure it would have just been bad, like worse. Like, I either would have killed myself for good, or we would have gotten in a horrible fist fight and the police would have gotten involved because my anger management issues were coming out. Like, the thing about alcohol is it also like lowers your inhibitions, right? And part of your inhibition is your lizard brain, the part of your brain that's just like fight or flight, just protect.
The limbic system, if I'm not correct.
Yeah, emotional. Yeah. And so like,
is that correct? I don't know.
I believe so.
I sound smart though, so
yeah,
whatever.
It sounds great. So you know, when I was drinking, it's either Will's going to be a jolly, Mickey-outy, slutty drunk, or he's going to be a rage drunk, get the fuck away, we don't know what's going to happen. So I either would have fucked the wrong person at the wrong time and gotten in some serious shit, or I would have gotten so angry I killed myself or hurt someone I cared about. And so I didn't get there, though. I didn't hit rock bottom. Like, I was able to pick up the pieces kind of okay. I'm still feeling the ripple effects of what happened last year. I still have, like, these really uncomfortable reminders of the stuff that went down. A hole is still in my wall, but I make sure it's there. It's a symbol for me to not forget. But like even here at our company, like people ask me where I worked before and why I left, and I'm all Oh my God, goldfish! What? Don't talk about that. Our relationship had lots of issues at the time. Like Randall and I are open, and we were seeing this other guy together, and he like ran away screaming basically because I mean we saw him for a long time and the relationship was really rewarding and he spoiled us, like it was great, but we had some serious issues. And so his shop that he owns is on my walk to the bus, so I see his shop every single day, and he owns a very popular clothing store and all of my friends shop there. Like all of these like reminders of these things that happen come up. But like, I got a job. I'm gunning for a promotion. Mm-hmm. I've got some side hustles going to get extra money. My boss respects me. About half of my coworkers respect me.
They don't like you.
So like, I feel like I didn't hit rock bottom. I still got my shit together, but I still made a very solid choice that I'm not wavering on.
Sounds like you could see the bottom.
I could see the bottom. That's a good way to say it.
You were in one of those glass bottom boats, you know, that they have.
That could go a real weird way.
You're in the boat and you're like, oh,
like Catalina
shit.
Boat.
Yeah, and you look down and you're like, there
it is. Oh my God, there are sharks in Garibaldi.
Yeah, you're like, there's the bottom. I can see it, but I'm still on the boat, but I can definitely see where bottom is. Something like that.
Yeah, the abyss, the void.
The void. Yeah, exactly. So can you just like walk us through or kind of maybe pointers for people who are looking to cut back or, you know, that to deal with these serious emotional and mental repercussions from cutting back? Can you just kind of walk through what were some of the main factors that really helped you when you decided that day when you're like, I'm going sober? Mm. What were the main tenets that let you stay on that path?
That let me stay on the path?
Yeah.
Like after I made the decision.
Like tips. We'll call them tips.
I mean, it's different for everyone, right? There's...
Yeah, but what helped you specifically to say?
Okay. Well, I avoided bars.
Seriously. Okay,
I mean,
that's
like,
great.
Get the fuck away from those bars until, like, you're comfortable. So we have something here in Austin called Queer Bomb, which is basically, like, an indie, like, guerrilla version of Pride for local businesses and artists and musicians. And I had, like, four... or less weeks sober when Queer Bomb hit last year. And my friend... it's called Queer Bomb.
Queer Bomb.
Queer Bomb.
There's so many things that could be. That could be. That's a drink.
That's the name of my...
That's a porno.
That's the name of my entrance every morning. So I had a friend in from Chicago who wanted to go to Queer Bomb. And I was like, okay, Miguel, like, let's go to Queer Bomb. It'll be great. It'll be fun. I'll be your designated driver. And yeah, I can totally be around booze and say no. Fine, great. Mm. And I got there, and like within 8 minutes, full blown panic attack. Mm. Like, oh my God, how am I going to say no to all these people offering me drugs and alcohol? All of the people I know here, I knew so many people there that were wasted when I got there. And I was babysitting my friend who was also very drunk because he was on vacation. And I wasn't ready. Like, it was so overwhelming. It was like looking at a funhouse mirror version of yourself, and there's nothing you can do to look away. Ooh. Like, all of your friends are being assholes. They're, like, groping each other and, like, being, like, rapey and flirty and aggressive and messy and dumb. Like, and you're staring at all of them, and you're like, oh, my God, this is me every weekend.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. Like, I freaked. I left.
It's like, a really good way to put it, looking at yourself in a funny mirror and you can't look away.
Yeah,
really,
like, because, like, literally everywhere you turn, there is a drunk person making a mistake. So avoid bars. I would say 3 months. Like, you know how most jobs will say, like, it takes 3 months to ramp up here. That's how I feel about being sober. It takes 3 months to be around alcohol without freaking out. That's what it was for me. And then from there, I learned it was a hard lesson where I had to learn that a lot of people who I thought were my friends were not my friends. They were just drinking buddies.
Yeah, I've heard that from quite a few people.
Dude, like, you know, I talk about in the office, like, I'm actually a hermit. Like, I'm really outgoing at work. But the second I go home, I stop talking and don't see anyone. It's because I realized, like, I don't have anything in common with these people. We just congregate in the same space to get drunk together, and we don't have anything to talk about. They don't have any of my interests. They don't share any of my values. We're just all got good, fun, drunk chemistry. Like, we all like to dance and laugh and tell stories, but nothing is of value is actually happening. So as my, you know, my group of friends started to dwindle, that was hard. Like, I liked having a circle of people around me when I went out. I didn't love going out, but I loved seeing my friends. And when I realized that I was drinking to cope with the anxiety of being in crowded places to see people that I don't actually have a lot in common with, I was like, whoa, I have to rethink my whole social like life. Mm-hmm. And I wish someone, I mean, it would have been nice to get a heads up to learn that all of the people that I'm drinking with, very few of them are actually going to stick around when I stop. I don't talk to 99% of them anymore. I mean, we see each other on Facebook. We like each other's posts and say, yeah, we should hang out sometime. And I'm like, yeah, that'll never happen because all you do is drink and you don't have anything going for you. Also, you learn that people you really like and respect are kind of shitty, or you see them for who they really are, which can be good or bad. It's just you don't have this like alcohol and bar layer in front of you to give this like sort of Vaseline filter context.
A facade over these
people. Yeah. So another tip I would say is just like be ready for your group of friends to get real small for a minute until you find people who share your values again.
So it turns into like a quality over quantity situation.
Exactly. Because once you take away the booze, like what do you have to talk about?
Right.
Oh, nothing, because you don't have anything in common. You kind of have to like recultivate your circle, or you can choose not to, whichever is more rewarding.
Right.
The thing about quitting drinking is like you get to look at yourself in this really unforgiving light. And all of your own values and convictions become really clear, and you stop putting up with things you don't care about because you've had to go through hell and back in order to stop drinking and stick with it and get your life back on track. So you have less patience for frivolity. So when I'm kind of like bitter or rolling my eyes or being sarcastic and snippy, I've ultimately just lost patience for bullshit and lost, you know, It's because if I worked so fucking hard to be a better person, and this is a line I work with, like, why do other people not work as hard as me to correct their behavior and be better people? That's another tip.
The world doesn't revolve around you, Will.
I know, right? So, it's true. It's disappointing. When you're drinking, you're ultimately being fucking selfish. It's all about you. It's all about your emotions. Mm. And then you stop drinking, you bust your ass, you get back on your feet, you get a job, you do this, you do that, you budget, you finally take care of business. And then you start judging everyone who doesn't do the same thing.
Dude, okay, this is hysterical. That is so funny you bring that up because you are completely right, and it's the ego just has this very, very finicky tricks that it plays.
Totally.
I swear to God, Will, I could give up drinking for one day. I go out and I see people having a beer at lunch, and I'm like, man.
Exactly.
That's sad. That is sad. And I literally had a, like, I could have a beer at lunch the day before.
Yeah.
That morning, say, I'm not drinking today. And I go in and I see someone drinking at lunch, and I'm like, God. They should get their stuff together. That's just like,
right.
Or if I have my phone out, right, and I'm on my phone, I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'm on my phone. If I decide, you know what, I'm gonna leave my phone in the car for while I go into the market, and I see people at the checkout line on their phones, I'm like, God, what has society come to? This is, people are pathetic. And like,
right.
I literally am
right.
that person the
exactly.
other 90% of the time. But you're right, the ego just gets in and tricks you.
It does trick you. So I was doing that thing at our company for a while. I was freshly sober, and I was like, no, I don't go to happy hours, this and that. And I mean, in the end, all people are saying is like, this guy's a fuck. He doesn't even go to happy hours. The thing
what
about
the fuck are these planes, by the way. It's like,
I hope that they can hear us.
You know.
Just because you stop drinking, this is like the biggest tip. None of my tips are like, it'll be easier. No, it's all fucking hard.
No, yeah. We want real
the
tips.
The biggest fucking tip is just because you stop drinking doesn't mean you're less of a shitty person.
Mm.
It means that your behavior has less like lubricant to get out there, but your thoughts are still the same. Your behavioral patterns are still the same. The way you treat people is still the same. You're just not doing it as much or with as much enthusiasm or acuity,
gusto,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Because you're not wasted all the time. Mm. So like my judgmental behavior of being like, these people voting for Trump, these people drinking, I can't believe these people smoke weed at work. Like, you know, like all of that was like, oh, Will's being selfish and judgmental just without alcohol. Okay.
So does it make it, now you can recognize it much easier.
Yes. And then you hopefully can become curbit. Yes, exactly. The thing about stopping the drinking is, yes, it's horrible for your liver. Yes, you're shitty when you're drunk. You make mistakes, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, like, you also have no self-awareness and you're not making enough progress or having enough clarity to change the deeper parts of yourself that alcohol is really just hiding. And the thing about alcohol is you've also been like drinking so much and associating that behavior with drinking, therefore meaning like that behavior happens a lot because you're drinking a lot. So for me, it would be like making out with everyone who says hi to me, for example.
Just an example.
Will at the bar likes to make out with people. It's the queer hello.
I think it's a guy with... I think it's a dude with beards thing, because I just have like this fire cat, like not the captain, but like one of the supervisors, and he was straight in his arrow, but like he would get drunk and he would just like want to hug everyone, like kiss them on the cheek, and he had this big old beard, right. And he was bald too, actually.
Well, that's just our testosterone ruining our lives. but the shitty behavior, like, okay, example, me, my promiscuousness, like definitely associated with drinking, right? Stop drinking. Wait,
I think everyone can
I'm still
to that.
Promiscuous. I just have some guilt about it now. Like, you know, or some people when they're drunk and they feel attacked, they get crazy defensive and go off the chain, right? If they're feeling like put in a corner in an argument and they've been drinking, and have you ever tried to reason with someone who's drunk and they're just not seeing it? They're just getting crazy defensive all the time.
Yes, and I have a lot of friends who, especially in the past, I'm not talking to my friend anymore.
Right. It's a different person.
It's literally a different person.
It's basically...
They became possessed by the alcohol demon, whatever you want to call it. Right. I literally am like sitting there, you know, like, hey, you know, fucking John, like, I'll talk to John tomorrow if he's in there. Yeah. I'm not talking to this fucking person, whoever this is right now.
Right. The thing about that is that person's, like, in there when they're not drinking. It's just not hanging out with you.
Right.
You know? So the thing about drinking is it stops that person from coming out more if you stop drinking. But then, like, that person's still there. You still got to work on your shit. You just, alcohol is preventing you from working on your shit. Right. I wasn't able to successfully actually work on my trauma therapy and actually... be able to keep my composure in a panic attack and know what to do if I'm about to cry at work on a phone call. Like, I was not able to learn that stuff until I stopped drinking. Like, that shit's all still there. And actually, it was harder to deal with that stuff and learn how to be a normal person without it. But it only happened because I stopped drinking.
Right.
So it's not like stopping drinking changes who you are. They say it all the time we call it the program in AA, and I don't go to meetings, to be clear, but it's a really great solution for a lot of people. And if you think you might have a drinking problem, you should always just check it out to see what's up. But people in AA will often leave because they're like, they're full of shitty people, addicts are awful, this and that, there's so much drama. It's part of why I left. It's 100% true. Like, when you're drinking, you're conditioning yourself to act this way because you're drinking and causing this behavior. You're losing your inhibitions, making shitty decisions, and it becomes normal for you. You have to relearn how to be a person. That's the hardest part.
Yeah, that's like, I think that that's scary to hear.
It is.
That's
like
a scary proposition.
Dude, like, you know.
Even to cut back, to be like, oh, I gotta look into who I actually am.
Right.
Like, I think I'll just keep drinking.
Yeah, like no peace, I'm cool.
Yeah.
Perfect example. You know, my husband has a back injury right now. He's not able to work, and I'm having to man up and make extra money, work extra hours. I would not have been able to do that while I was drinking. Not because the capacity wasn't there, but because I would have been like, but what about my life? What about my life? What about... I got karate, I got work, I'm trying to find a better job. Like, Randall, I really need you to work. That's what would have happened. But because I stopped drinking, I was able to finally realize, like, I'm one of the most selfish people I know. And so now that when I have those thoughts are still there. I still am like, there are these moments where I'm resenting Randall because I'm so tired because I'm working extra hours and he's unable to work. But I'm like, whoa, back the fuck up, diva. Like, your husband is in so much pain he can't work. Sit down, shut up, and work. I'm only able to do that because I quit drinking and I learned how selfish and awful I can be.
And now you deal with your life.
Yeah. And now I'm like, all right, I can feel selfish and I can feel angry, but it better not show and it better not affect my relationship.
Right. And now you deal with it.
Yeah.
You brought up a really good point. God, this is literally absolutely like amazing. It's right perfect. Now the light's coming out here by the water. We're over by the lake, by the trail. Yeah. You brought up a really good point earlier. About like how I think a lot of it has to, when you have to let go of some of your friends, you got to redo your social circle, you got to redo you as a human. It becomes these things that we do that become a part of our identity are mm-hmm. so sticky.
Mm-hmm.
They stick to you, you know, and then you're like, no, this is, I'm Will the partier.
Yeah.
You know, like for me, yeah, it's like, no, I'm Alex, the guy who changes locations every 6 months and always down for a good time. And, you know, all these things that you like somehow construct in your mind of like who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And God damn it. Those are difficult to let go because
right.
then you think, well, if I'm not the partier anymore, or if I'm not the guy who's always down to like go out on a Friday night, then who am I?
Yeah.
That part of me, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a scary, that's a scary moment when you realize like, A, the person who you thought you were is no longer an option, but B, like you weren't even that person to begin with, because when you take away the booze, like, I mean, that was the factor that made you, you know? So I used to be Will the party animal. I used to be Will the drunk hermit.
Mm.
But ultimately it was just like, when you took away the booze, there was nothing left in those two identities. Like, well, I can't be a party animal if I'm not drinking, and I can't be a drunk hermit if I'm not drinking. So that doesn't really mean anything. They're just hiding whatever is really there.
Right.
And exacerbating what's bad.
Right.
The worst parts of your personality. we work in marketing, so I hate saying this, but it's a rebrand. Like, and it's not a rebrand.
That's a good way to describe it. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, you just, so, you know.
You gotta rise from the ashes.
You rise from the ashes.
And you do have to, I think rebranding is a good way to put it because you're rebranding the way that you see yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you have
that hits it. It's not how people see you, because when you make the decision to stop drinking, if you've gotten that far where like you're kind of forced to hand and making a choice, you got to stop caring what people think, because at that point you're making the decision for you or someone you care about very, very much, usually like your parents or your brother or your partner. And the rebrand is all about you. You need to figure out like, who do I want to be? It's like that. Do you remember that movie Boyhood that came out last
year? I never saw that.
Well, the trailer.
It follows a young boy. And they actually filmed it over like 10 years, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and I never saw it either. I don't have like 3.5 hours of free time to sit down and watch people age, but I heard it was very good. But a line from the trailer was, who do you want to be? I think the character's name is Ellis. Like, what do you want to do, Ellis? Who do you want to be?
Mm.
And it's just like, parents ask you that when you're going to college, you have to ask yourself that question again. Like, what are your values?
Yeah.
What really matters? What are your priorities? Right now it might be find a fucking job, but what happens once you get that job, get off your feet, get out of rehab? Like, how are you going to spend your free time?
Mm.
That's the scary part. Mm. Like, oh my God, it's 5 o'clock and I don't have to go to bed till 10. What am I going to fucking do?
Like, yeah.
So for me, like, I just started reading a lot, self-educating a lot, and working out more. And I became stronger and stronger and stronger in my social justice convictions. And now that's kind of my brand at work. Like, everyone laughs about it because I always have something to say. But I fucking care. Like,
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel this strongly about this stuff when I felt that strongly about Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I feel so strongly about this stuff, about social justice and civil rights and the arts and all of these things I'm into now, much more since I quit drinking, that I don't give a fuck if people don't like it, which is almost as empowering as being able to say no to a drink.
I sent you that link the other day. That was I love that line, by the way. I didn't care about it that much as long as I cared that much about Jameson.
Yeah.
You just said, that's a great line.
Yeah.
Oh,
the link about like choosing what.
Well, no, I sent you that book the other day. It's
yeah.
called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson.
It's yeah. And I think you said I summarized it by saying like, I just chose what to give a fuck about.
That's literally yeah. the entire book is like, he's saying, look, the core of self-improvement, you know, all this fluff about like, you can be great and blah, 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 which is like kind of half of what this podcast is, but it's also kind of.
Well, it's deconstructing it because you're showing that there's no one way to do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Brandon.
Have y'all more often. Just compliment me for 45 minutes. No, that's basically it. The whole thing is about like self-improvement boils down to deciding your priorities. Or in his way, he's like, just decide what you want to give a fuck about or not.
Yeah.
Don't give a fuck because, you know, yeah, your car broke down and it needs new tires kind of thing. Like, is that really important? No, give a fuck because, you know, your dad now has stage 4 cancer. You know, like, choose your priorities.
Yeah.
Choose the things to give a fuck about. And, you know, I don't want to keep just, like, badgering down booze because, like I said, a lot of people can do it responsibly. But all these things, all these distractions, booze and fucking Instagram and Snapchat and Netflix, you know, like, all these things just, like, they readjust your priorities.
And right.
They readjust your compass where now you're skewing. The boat's starting to go, like, a certain way.
Right.
And you're like, this isn't the direction that I chose. I just somehow ended up here.
Right. And it's interesting because you never choose to become an alcoholic. I didn't wake up and be like, I can't wait to get all of my daddy issues into this bottle and become a problem.
Yeah.
I'm like... like, I didn't wake up and be like, I'm going to drink about my life and make sure that I make my marriage really difficult and, like, fall 5 years behind in my career. I didn't wake up. It just, you stop paying. I wasn't paying attention to what I cared about and just kind of rolling with it.
And that's, I think, one of the scary parts is that it kind of just, it creeps up on you.
Oh, yeah. I was so surprised.
What do we got over here?
CrossFit's going on over there.
Is that like junior high CrossFit? Looks like junior high kids.
Sounds like junior high kids.
Yeah.
It's all the same. People who can work out.
My voice was so high back then. And I was like, this, like, kids used to make fun of me. He's like, hey, I'm Alex. Dropped like after eighth grade. Thank God. But what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So where do you think the line is for, you know, because like I said, a lot of people listening and myself included, it wasn't like I wasn't to that stage yet. I wasn't like into the deep abyss yet. It just was dragging me down. I knew it was holding me back from my potential. I knew it was just not adding to my life. You know, it wasn't doing me any favors. Where's that line? Like, how can we all draw the distinction, you think, from casual drinking, which is everywhere, and everyone wakes up going, maybe I should cut it back. And then all of a sudden it's like, alcoholism. It's like there's not that much middle ground.
Yeah, I mean,
where did it, like, do you, when you were going through it, was there, I guess you didn't really have points where you thought there was a problem, but
no, I mean,
it's just interesting.
I was like,
that
it's everyone
don't...
else's problem. It's not me. I'm
sure.
Perfect.
I guess it's just weird that we, you know what I'm talking about? There's no, like, gray area. It's like,
yeah, for sure. Well, it's because, you know, especially for people our age, and you know, this particular segment that you're doing today, I think is probably going to resonate more with people our age. It's the distractions are so plentiful in our society, right? That we know what we want, but we're not actually tracking if we're getting there. So I actually was thinking about this the other day, like my 5-year plan, right? I would say, like, do a self-examination. Okay, am I closer to X goal than I was last year? No? Okay, why not? Okay, how am I spending my free time? How am I spending my money? It's always going to go to food and booze. Like, our age, like, we hate cooking. We hate being by ourselves. We want constant social validation. And all of our friends are thinking and feeling the same exact thing. So we're just rolling along with it. But we're not conditioned or trained by our higher ups, by our parents, to stop every once in a while and be like, am I actually on the way to what I want? Or am I just reacting to things that are going on? You know, I've been wanting to get back into, like, the admin world of just my career, because you and I are in client-facing kind of revenue-related roles right now, some sales, some customer service, some consulting. But, like, my first career before drinking got, like, way in the way was, like, opening clinics. So I've been wanting to get back there for a long time. But I think, like, over the last 3 years, I never stopped once and said, oh, how come I'm not back there yet? And analyzed that. I just kept, like, trying to get jobs and drinking and trying to do well at jobs and making new friends and having sex and, ooh, karate's fun. But I never stopped and was like, well, how come I'm not writing marketing programming anymore? How come I'm not doing project management anymore? I just knew I wasn't, and that's where I wanted to go.
Just the hedonic treadmill.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was just kind of spinning my wheels. And our age, we have so much energy and so many resources, and the internet is fucking crazy. Like, I'm blown away by how much information is out there. And there's like no reason we shouldn't at least be able to identify like why we're not meeting our goals. I mean, and there are, of course, a lot of that, you know, plays into intersectionality depending on like where you grew up, where you're from. If you're a marginalized people, like people of color, you definitely have different sets of disadvantages, lots of different kind of social glass ceilings, especially in that community. But if you're spinning your wheels, you're never actually going to know you're spinning your wheels unless you ask yourself, why am I not going anywhere? Why am I not getting what I want? How come I haven't gotten promoted? Why am I not a serious consideration for team lead? How come I haven't gotten a raise? Like, asking yourself why these things, really asking yourself why you didn't get the things that you want, really opens a lot of doors. And sometimes like Pandora's box of like, holy shit, I'm not as cool as I thought I was. But if you're ever kind of wondering like, ooh, I should cut back, or like, I don't know, I feel like I put too much money into this. Like, do we do anything other than happy hours here? Or, like, if you're ever feeling that way, I would just say like, ask yourself why you aren't already where you want to be. And how come, like, if you have a certain number of steps to get to say, like, let's say I wanted to be a sex therapist, takes X, Y, and Z. How come I'm not at X? Why am I not at X? Why am I not applying to schools? Why am I not reading books? Oh, because of Netflix and booze. Like, I didn't spend any time last night reading articles. I watched porn on Tumblr and watched like 5 episodes of 13 Reasons Why because I was tired from my job. Well, I was probably be less tired if I wasn't drinking the night before and not cracking open a beer to chase the hangover as soon as I got home from work. Perfect. And that's a lot of my hindsight being like, fuck, man, if I had just asked myself these questions, like, would I have this marketing job I'm gunning for now, like, 2 or 3 years ago? Where would I be? And, you know, you can't really control any of that, but it's a pretty shitty question to ask yourself, and it definitely resonates if you sit with it.
Let's end it on that. That was powerful. That was a great way to end it. I think that was terrific advice. I think everyone kind of followed that. You can get yourself in a lot better place, so.
Thanks, man.
Awesome, man. We'll wrap it up there.
Cool.
Appreciate you coming on, bro.
This was awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Thanks.
Deuces. Later.
Ta-ta.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening, and it would mean the world to me if you left a review, or more importantly, if you just shared the word about this podcast, if you told your friends, maybe gave it a share on social media. That is the biggest compliment that you could give to me, so that would, from the bottom of my heart, mean a lot, and as always, you know, I love getting some of the feedback, some of the texts and emails and stuff from you guys, letting me know what you get out of it. And the things that you love hearing, because then I can put more of that juicy goodness out. So you guys will hear from me in about a week or two for the new episode. And until then, rewrite the rules of your life. That sounds really cheesy. I don't think I'm ever going to do that again. But I'm going to think of some cool tagline, and I'm going to start saying it at the end of every podcast so I can say something cool. All right, see ya.